What's new with you, Liney?
I was gonna say I was gonna actually compliment you on your T-shirt and
Oh,
how much I like your
thanks.
T-shirt. Can you tell the listeners what T-shirt you're wearing?
It is actually Lost in Translation T-shirt. It's from the brand Secret,
No,
SCRT.
no, no, no. You just want
Sponsors
to.
of the
You just want to shut up.
podcast.
No, they're not.
They're not okay. Well, okay, they're not sponsors of the podcast. I'd
You
like
want
them
them
to
to
be.
be. There, you want
I'd
them to
like them
be.
to be. Shout out Secret
Well, they're
or
not sponsors, so they don't get a
Secret.
shout out.
They're up and
Okay,
coming. They're
I
a
think
small brand in
enough
Shoreditch.
about shorts. What I was going to say is that is one of my favorite short, my favorite films of all time is Lost in
It's
Translation.
a good film.
I
It's a
love
good
it
film.
so
What did you
much.
make of Priscilla?
I enjoy Priscilla a lot more than
Sofia
you did.
Coppola's new film.
Yeah, I enjoy
Yeah,
Priscilla a
yeah.
lot more than you did.
Oh yes, that's right. You enjoyed it. You
Yeah,
like a bit of slow cinema.
I have a more refined taste than you in cinema,
I'm
which
just
is
more.
probably
I'm more
why.
into just. I guess I've just got quite high standards when it comes to
Set
filmmaking.
the
That's
man
the
who
difference
liked
between
what
you
was
and
it?
me.
The man who liked Sharknado 3 or something, isn't that your one of your favorites?
That is not. That's just, you just made that up. Although I did kind of enjoy. I watched Roadhouse, with Conor
Oh
McGregor
yeah, and
and
Jake
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. Okay.
So silly, so silly. But I did kind of enjoy that.
Well, speaking of Roadhouse, we've got a new
Speaking
guest. Segue
of films, we have a
Speaking
new
of
guest.
films, who's our new guest, Ian?
We have on the podcast today Charlotte Hamblin, and she's a British actor, director, and writer based in London. She trained at RADA on the foundation course and then went on to study English drama with education at Cambridge. So she's got some good education creds.
She does have some good. She got loads of good creds actually, which we're about
Oh,
to
yeah.
go through. Charlotte's acting theatre credits include Strings, which was held at the Royal Court Upstairs, and Miss Julie, which she was nominated for an Offie for. And her TV credits include The Alienist season 2, which is on Netflix, McMafia on BBC One, and Downton Abbey, which is a pretty big deal. Downton Abbey. I don't know if you've heard of it, Yann. And her films include Operation Mincemeat, which was a film with Colin Firth and Matthew McFadyen in. So she's done a fair
Yes.
amount. She's done a fair amount of acting, has
She
Charlotte.
has, and she's also not only within TV and theatre, but she's done a lot of really well-received short films, including Cubicle, which we talk about in this episode, which is directed by
Awesome.
Chloe Wicks, and Extinction, which was directed by Jack Cooper-Stimson and stars Emma Thompson. And basically, Charlotte decided to pursue writing as a way of first getting acting gigs for herself, but then decided or discovered a passion and a love for that, and has been pursuing screenwriting professionally for the last 6 years. And so some of her TV writing credits over the last 6 years include writing the episode of Hannah, which you can find on Amazon Prime if you've got that. And she's also participated in writers' rooms for in the writers' room for the black comedy series Personal Assistants.
And we delve into her work as a director as well, because that's actually one big thing that she's focusing on now. And her debut short film, Everybody Dies Sometimes, which she directed, won Best British Short at the British Short Film Awards and was an official selection at the Tribeca Film Festival, which we talk about in depth on the podcast, her experience at Tribeca, which is really cool to hear about. And it's recently been released on Omeletto and Director's Notes. We talk about her all sorts of stuff. She's really, really good fun, actually, just to hang out with for the afternoon. We talk about working with named talent, because there's named talent in her first short film, her festival journey with Everybody Dies Sometimes, and her experiences along the way on that. And then how she approaches her visual style with cinematographers and production designers, and then also her writing process.
And we're going to jump into this episode with Will asking Charlotte about her decision to transition into directing from acting and writing.
Let's get into it. So you started with the acting and you did the writing to kind of give yourself more agency as an actor. Why the directing, and then how have you found that as well then?
Well, the director, so I worked as a, so I sort of worked as a screenwriter for like the last sort of 6 years. And I just, to be honest, guys, you're gonna laugh. I thought for ages, like a twat, I was like, I can never be a director. And someone's like, why? And I was like, well, I just don't understand all that stuff about lenses and like the colours and shit. And someone's like, that's a DOP. That's a cinematographer. That's not the director. I was like, oh, so you don't have to know all that stuff. They're like, not really. Get someone to see that for you. I was like, oh, great. I could do that. So it was just like, I think just not knowing or and then I was like, oh, I'd never be able to do it. And then it was actually Leo Darby, who is the producer for Tea Shop, who gave me some of the money to do Everybody Dies Sometimes, who was like, you write so visually like a director. You know what you want. You write shots. You can do this. And I was like, can I?
Yeah. So and that was the first one you did then? Or was it?
Everybody Dies was the first one.
What about
one?
The morning?
Not a morning person. It's my second one, but I didn't write that. So that was written by Toto Bruin. And that so it was kind of an amazing experience because to go from doing, I was so glad I did it, to direct someone else's and work with them. And the producers on that, Izzy Meikle-Small and Will Matthews, I'm doing my third one with. They're amazing. Cool.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I was approached to do that. And it was an amazing thing to have gone from like writing and directing my own one and producing. Yeah. And then to just kind of be brought on almost like a jobbing director.
Yeah.
And it was a totally different beast because you're there. You're not running the show. It's not like, you know, and it was, I think, the amazing move to do to kind of... Yeah. To direct someone else's work. I don't think I'm as strong as doing other people's work as I am my own, because I think you can, like, if there's a problem for me, like, I can fix it because I'm like, but there's just more juggling parts, I think, with directing someone else's work. And also the responsibility of doing someone else's stuff, and Toto stars in it as well. It's doing its festival journey at the moment. And I think there was actually more of an anxiety around doing that because it's someone else's baby.
Yeah, okay.
With mine, I'm like, if I fuck this up, it's all on me, and oh God, well, whatever.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. But with someone else's stuff, there's a different responsibility there.
Yeah.
Which was, it was quite scary, but they're so lovely. And now, you know, I'm working with the producers who were just so, you know, so brilliant.
Yeah.
And so they're doing my third, which I'm written and directing.
Yeah.
Have you found now after doing those two projects, so you know, you're saying you were scared of like, I don't know what lenses are and I don't know how to do color palettes. Have you found now doing those, you that's something you're into now? That you've and you really like, it's another way of expressing yourself?
I definitely know what a color palette is now. I do. I think I still like what I don't think of myself in any way like a cinematographer. I just love working with them and what they can bring to it. But I definitely have more of an interest and care and understand. It's not more of an interest. I just didn't know anything. I just didn't know. But I got mocked intensely on Everybody Dies because I'd learn a technical term and I'd use it to death. So swing a lens. Sorry, just swinging a lens. Swinging a lens. And Freddie, the first AD, was like, Charlie, we get it. And they're like, you've got to learn something.
Go and hang out with the actors, please.
Yeah, and then they'd just be like, can we clear the director from set? She's getting in the way. So, I mean, and also,
I think that's like a big big stumbling block, because obviously you came from acting into directing.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, people like go, oh, I don't know. I don't know anything about cameras and you know, ISOs and lenses and lighting.
Yeah.
But then, you know, on the other side of things, you've got directors that don't know anything about actors as well.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. It's interesting what the stories
maybe, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And also, it's I went into that job. It wasn't a job. It was something I created.
Yeah.
I went into that project going, I am never... I think at somewhere like Cambridge, and I'm really dyslexic, I always felt a bit like I shouldn't have got in.
Mm.
Like my school like told me I should never have, like they begged me not to have, like, it's like I've never really had imposter syndrome. I was just like, I think I just lied my way in here slightly. So I've always felt that I was like the least intelligent person in the room.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I made a lot of mistakes in my early life by not asking questions because I was scared about looking stupid.
Mm.
And because I'm now, I think, quite a secure person, I was like, I'm going to go into this and I am going to, if there is one tiny thing I don't understand, I am going to ask.
Yeah.
I don't care about looking, I couldn't give a shit now.
Yeah,
I don't care about looking stupid.
Yeah,
I'm just going to, or you go, yeah. And you're like, Google. Because I was like, what's the point in doing this
absolutely.
If I'm not just going to learn
And presumably
something?
they you would have come into that and everyone around you would have known your yes. background, right? They would have known, oh, you're coming from the act, you're coming from a different angle here.
Exactly.
So hopefully
totally.
They wouldn't be like, fuck off, because, well, like, you know, yeah. they get it, right?
Exactly. I mean, and I think everyone, I remember going to meet Simon Plunkett, who was the DOP, and I just went, you've
on
got
everybody
on
dies.
Everybody Dies. Yeah. And I just went, to me, you speak a different language.
Yeah.
And I don't know any of this, and you're gonna have to hold my hand, and that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you know.
How did you get in contact with him then? And then I guess honesty is the best policy. You're like, I'm an actor and a writer. I don't know anything about this kind yeah. of stuff. You need to help me. Is that how you chose him?
It was through the producer. So basically, T-Shop, who I've been working with on several different projects, and I'd done a few things for them, and there was a feature film that I'd written, so I have to go forward
no,
I promise it won't be too long. No. So I'd written a feature film that we had sort of set up basically, and then, you know, it's like a house of cards, all these things, you know, one thing goes and they all go. And I remember Leo saying to me, I really think you should direct this, and I was like, oh, fuck, I haven't done anything. She was like, well, you need to do a short. And she was like, I was like, well, money. And they said they'd give me some money towards it. And then I said, I put the rest of the money in it. And so that's what we had. I mean, that was just like, I again didn't realize how like amazing that is. But it's the best investment I've ever put in my own money as well. And it wasn't, you know, enormous amounts of money at all. And so it was Leo who knew Simon and was like, I've been watching him. We've known each other through, the end, you know, coming up, and I think he's brilliant. And so she sort of set it up and was like, you know, and I think they wanted to work together. So, you know, I think working with like Leo and T-Shop was a big pull. And then I just, you know, I remember ringing, like, oh my God, he's amazing. I don't know if you know Freddie Hall, he's a director, first AD, extraordinaire. And I rang him going, Freddie, darling Freddie, do you have any kind of up and coming third seconds who want a gig to try the hand at firsting? And he goes, what are the dates? And I was like, this is the date. She goes, can I do it? And I was like, I mean, he like seconded I May Destroy You, like he's extraordinary. Oh, wow.
Right.
And to have him and Simon,
yeah,
and also Freddie is the most generous person I think I've ever met in my entire life, and I could just be like, this is that, which was great. And to have them around you, I think that's my advice if you're ever making a film, just, and you don't know what you're doing, don't be frightened, just get people in the room who know what they're doing.
Yeah, and be honest that you're this is where I'm at.
Exactly. Yeah. And just be really transparent. And also, there were things that Freddie was like, I think you need to get some coverage for this, and I'm like, okay, cool. So there's so much in that film that wouldn't have happened without them. And so, also now that I wouldn't have ever thought that you had to do. So there was, you know, there was a lot of like gorgeousness in people's generosity. And that's what I've done. Cause I think I started in this, it's so funny. I started in this industry, but like, actually, I don't think I'd like act in a short film because like, you know, that's not great. And now I'm like, anyone who asked me to be in anything, I would barely read it. I'll be like, yeah, I'd do it. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, I love
to
it.
To meet people and collaborating, hone your craft, I guess. And
I acted in a short film, right? A couple of years ago, directed by, I love a guy called James Newman, and I got that because their actor dropped out and the guy who was playing the lead, Newman, said, she'll do it, she'll do anything. It was brilliant. And James, you know, he was a bit of my guru when doing all the festival stuff, because I hadn't a fucking clue. I'm like, James, what does this mean? And and he helped me, and it's like that generosity of, I love that spirit of short films. And actually, I'm just forever grateful that I just, nothing really happened when I started acting, and then I was dropped by a really big agent and just was at, you know, rock bottom shit, because, you know, I was so humbled. I think you come out of somewhere like Cambridge and you think you think you're like the best person in the entire world,
right?
Because but you do, you
yeah.
do get,
I mean, to clarify, sadly I did not go to Oxford University, Oxford School of Drama, but I always like drop
still
it in like,
head,
oh, Oxford, you know, but yeah, I did have a big head as well.
Yeah.
But I had, you know, similar sort of thing.
It's just like, they're just, everything humbles you, doesn't
it?
Like,
it's so important.
If you make, I've been making one of my first shorts being like, can't wait to go to Sundance. And then, you know, obviously nothing happened with it. And you're like, well, fuck it. And then you look back and you're like, that is really bad. Yeah. And then you make the next one, you're like, Sundance is beckoning me. Nope, doesn't happen again. But you like look back here, like, okay, it was better than that other one. And you get better and you meet more people.
Yeah. I mean, I still have that now, like, with I don't co-write very often, but on one TV project I'm working on, co-writing with genius producer, and she's trying hand at writing, and she's so funny, Stella Mertz. And every time we write a good line or come up with something, we just go, BAFTA. So it's still there. It's still
you gotta have BAFTA.
And it's like, oh, and I've like, I think people who are like, I don't think about awards, and they're such a bollocks. I have my BAFTA night planned out. Yeah. Like, I'm going to go, I'm going to rent a nice bougie hotel room, and I'm going to have them come deliver IV drips at 5 a.m. when I get in so that I can restore myself.
Yeah.
I've got the full BAFTA plan.
I've got like a whole Sundance. Yeah. So like, you're there.
You're there.
Oh, really? Yeah, Babs is there as well. Yeah, we're there. We're doing it. Yeah, you could be there.
Thanks, babe.
Everyone applaud you?
Everyone's applauding only me.
Oh, okay. you hug me and Voucher, and then you go up to the stage.
Yeah. So
And then how many minutes?
And then I kind of reference these guys. Yeah. And then we go to the parties afterwards.
Of course. Yeah, but also, how many minutes is your standing ovation?
Oh, it's got
to be... Because, you know, they had a can one.
It's 8 minutes, isn't it?
Eight, no.
It just feels ridiculous to me. Like, who's doing this for 8 minutes? I'm like... It's got to be, even if it is an amazing film.
Yeah.
Also, I hadn't won or whatever happens at Cannes, I feel like whatever happens at Cannes, I would just be 8 minutes of pagag clapping.
Yeah. You bitch.
You fucking bitch. Yeah. I know. Anyway, sorry.
I just wanted to go back to something.
We digress.
Cut it.
So when you're talking about like coming to this from the acting and then not having that, I guess, technical awareness of like the camera and stuff like that. So I totally relate to that. Mm-hmm. Same exact thing for me. Do you feel like ever, I mean, you come from a different perspective because you were shooting your own stuff. Mm. So you were running around with your camera before you ever got a DP involved. Do you ever feel like insecure about like this sort of like, say if you like, I'm imagining this shot and the DP's like, I think it would be better over here. Do you feel ever like, oh, I don't have the same eye as the DP, and therefore I'm insecure in the kind of shot that I'm suggesting? Does that make sense? Because I don't have the background.
Sometimes, yes. I think sometimes when I'm in like a pitch or a meeting and they ask me like, oh, so did you see that we're going to be using this kind of camera? And I'm like,
right.
I'm like, shit, I need to go and look at that. Mm. But I think when it comes to storytelling, I'm like, this is the kind of shot I want. And I think if you're with someone you trust, you're like, they're only going to make me better and I want to listen to them and collaborate with it. Yeah, I think, but there is an insecurity of lack of knowledge, but it's all going like, you got to go and do your homework if you feel insecure about that, I think. Mm-hmm. But I tend to, so far, you never know. Like, I've worked with people that I really trust and I think are brilliant. So
Will be like, if you say, no, I think this shot is for the story, and then they go, actually, I think this shot is better for the story because it does this, then you can sort of have that dialogue that way.
Isn't it best idea wins, though, sometimes? Because, like, you might have, you'd be like, oh, I want to shoot from here because of this and this. And then you're like, oh, what about from there because of that? And you're like, oh, that's actually a really good idea. Yeah. And then it's like, maybe it's like, get rid of your ego.
But sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't know. This might be just me. But then I feel like, oh, well, she's got all the kind of background of working in that environment. Mm. So she might have a better perspective or like have a, you know, something that I'm not seeing.
Yeah.
I feel like that is maybe because, well, not maybe because, but I think that is because I don't have the same sort of, I didn't pick up a camera and run around with it. Like, you know, so I have less of an idea.
Totally.
Does that make sense?
I totally get that. And but I also think it like, you have to remember, and maybe also she's going to drop the woman card. Yeah. As a woman, like, you know, you do have to be like, I'm going to push for what I want a little bit harder than maybe I would have to if I wasn't a woman.
Yeah, okay.
So I think also, okay, I've got one thing I think you know, I trust your gut. Like, I think the reason when people make good shit is because they've got good guts.
Yeah, instinct, isn't it?
Instinct is so right. And actually, sometimes there's a meeting in the middle of going, that DOP, can we confuse what they're saying is this and what I'm thinking is this, and we fuse it. I do get where that insecurity comes from. Mm. But if you have that gut, I always try and like follow it or meet somewhere in the middle. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that.
A woman thing as a woman.
Yeah.
Thing. I think maybe, yeah, like, expand on that. I don't know. I'm curious about what you mean by that.
I think I think it's getting, it's so much better, but I think, you know, you naturally in life are you automatically, people will just trust men a little bit more. Even women do. Even sometimes I'm like, he knows when he's talking about because he's a man. Because that's in my internalized, you know, whatever. Bollocks. But I do think it is that, like, you've got to have that self-consciousness to go, like, okay, I've actually got to...
Stand my ground
a little bit more than you probably would. And then you... But the fear is always being called tricky or difficult.
Well, it's actually interesting that you say that, because I feel like the perception is, if you're doing that, you're tricky as a woman, tricky and difficult. If it's a man, they're a genius and they're standing their ground and they're brave. And it is that stupid perception. But that's how it's kind of viewed, I think, and everyone...
Totally.
Inadvertently, if that is, it is kind of viewed like
I've met, you know, I've close with a fucking phenomenal actress who's pretty well known, and I'd heard that she was quite tricky, and I met her and I was like, this woman isn't tricky.
This woman is brilliant
and she stands up for what she believes in, and I just and that's not tricky. And you know, but I think that, but also, fuck it, I don't give a shit, say what you want about me, I don't care, just, you know, let's make some good work. But like, just, I was talking about earlier in the kitchen, my main thing is, don't be a cunt. Someone was like, what do you look for in working with an actor or a team? It's like, just don't be a cunt. It's not that hard. And there's a difference between being assertive and asking for what you want, being an asshole. And I just don't, I'd rather work with someone less talented who's not a cunt.
And then they bring the passion to it, which is hopefully like,
and the care. And this is what's really cool. And talking about sort of like slightly starrier casting that's happening more and more in shorts, which is fucking awesome. Is that, you know, God, what I was saying is that I was like, she wants them beneath me when I was starting out. And if anyone turns up on set with that attitude, you're fucked.
Yeah, 100%.
It's horrible because you're constantly feeling like, oh my God, you're doing me a favor. Yeah, oh my gosh, I'm so grateful for you. You can't have that. They've agreed to be there and they come with that right attitude. And I think just people now, I think, and it might be a post-COVID thing, or that more people are making their own stuff. The generosity with which some of those high-profile people doing stuff is extraordinary.
It's insane, isn't it?
I love it.
On my last short, I got two actors in that were, like, above my league, but they put so much effort in, and, like, you know, because they were doing stuff they didn't like that was paying very well, but, like...
Yeah.
They're like, this is so much more fun.
Yeah.
And, like, I paid like, £300 or something. Yeah. I don't, you know, but put so much...
I call it, my agent calls it, 50p in a curly whirly. That's what they're asking. She goes, hi, darling, this is a 50p in a curly whirly.
So good.
And I'm like, oh, God. But it's, you know, it's really good. It'll be great on the CV. We're on the show reels.
Yeah. And also, it's like, are you doing anything then? No. So, like, and I think, actually, if you look at it from the directing, and we were going to go into this anyway.
Yeah.
On your short, Everybody Dies Sometimes. Yeah. You've got two pretty big name actors in there.
Yeah.
And like, I think, isn't there an element, one, how did you get them?
Yeah.
And two, maybe there's an element of just us just putting it out into the universe and going, they might be free. And if they're free, they want to be in it. Yeah. So how did that come
and
about?
It's Tanya Reynolds and Matthew Horne.
I mean, it still flabbergasts me that they are in it. And they did it. Well, with Tanya, it's slightly different. With Matt, I mean, that's a great story. So Tanya, I was taken to... So my friend Claudia Blunt, who's casting director, was like, I've got two tickets to go and see a play at the Royal Court. Tanya Reynolds is in it. And I was like, I love her. She's amazing. She's sex education. She's so funny. Mm. I think she's brilliant. And she was like, I'm being taken by her agent. And I said that you're like some important writer. And I was like, but I'm not. And she was like, you've got to pretend you're funny. Just come see the show and da-da-da. I was like, fuck, this person thinks I'm, you know, someone bigger than I am. Anyway, went to see the play. I thought, oh, it was brilliant. I can't remember what it was called. I'm so sorry. And met Tanya afterwards, got on like a house on fire, right? Yeah. Got on a house, loved her. We stayed in contact, followed each other on Instagram. And then lockdown happened. And someone approached me saying, do you want to do a lockdown charity play? And I was like, yeah, great. And it was fucking batshit. It was about, oh my God, what was it about? It was about, Oh, God. I've had a brain freeze. What are they called? Reenactors. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
It was about a group of historical reenactors and what they would do and how they would do, like, keep their historical reenactment going.
I love that.
In lockdown, and how they would do it on Zoom. And it was fucking chaos. And I was writing it and I was like, oh, this is very Tanya. I think Tanya's kind of vibe is... Often I was like, if who would play me in a film? And I'd be like, oh, it'd be Tanya Reynolds.
Right.
And I think I've always got her in like my back of my brain. Anyway, so I was just like, would you do it? She was like, yeah, I'll do it. Bloody waived her fee and gave it to the charity. You know, they're bloody lovely. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so she did it and I was like, great. You know, no one was doing anything. So it was kind of a chance for my arms. So we worked together and it was a hoop. Then I wrote Everybody Dies and I wrote it for her. I was like,
okay,
she's got to do it. Like, she's got, it's her. Because for me, I think Tanya is a genius when it comes to tragicomedy. There's nobody who can oscillate between those two like she does. I think Everybody Dies is a masterclass in tragedy comedy acting. Actually, I have to really finish that like quickly, but like, it's a masterclass.
Yeah.
And I think she made it. So I just sort of sent it to her and I was like, and she'd done a few shorts before and obviously like her star's rising and I was like, God, I don't know if we get her. Yeah. And she just said, and it's about death anxiety. And she was just like, yeah, I'm in. And I could not believe it. I was like, oh my God.
Wow, wicked. Yeah.
And you're getting the dates to work. But then, and you know, she's just brilliant. Anyway, Matt, on the other hand, was completely random. For the therapist.
Matt Horn from Gavin and Stacey from everyone. Yeah.
And also what I love about him in this film is it's so the opposite of what we're used to seeing him do a kind of, you know, he's an incredible stage actor and I've watched him so many times on stage and I just loved him. But I think on screen, I'd only really seen Gavin and Stacey.
Yeah.
So I love that this is so different for him. He's such a nice man. Anyway, so we offered out the therapist to someone. They said no. And I was like, oh God, it was getting, you know, nearer and nearer the time. We had someone... And then they dropped out. And then the set designer, because we shot it, we shot it in my flat and my neighbour's flat. That's the next story. And she came round and she was like, we're having a look. And she was going, you know, how's it all going? And I was like, well, that's fine. I just don't have the therapist character. I don't have the therapist. Oh, my God. And she was like, my boyfriend's an actor. And I was like, oh.
No way.
I was like, oh, okay, great. Yeah.
Well, send us self tape in, I guess.
All right. Yeah, okay. I was like, what's he done? She was like, well, he's done a few TV things and, you know, he's doing some stage. And I was like,
You come out with that straight away.
And I was like, what's his name? She was like, Matt Horn. I was like, we'll take him.
Yeah.
And obviously she was like, he's got to read it and like see if he wants to do it. Yeah. And I mean, they're married now. It's really sweet. Yeah. And and he said he was in. And Omega. I was like, what the fuck? But I think that's such a joyous story because also it was a classic moment like, oh, no, do not push your boyfriend actor on me.
Yeah.
Not this. Again, like, you never know. Don't be a cunt, Charlie. Yeah, it's your thing he said. But, like, it's just so... and the generosity of that as well. And he really liked it. And I don't think he'd... done anything.
I guess you needed a couple of days from him.
He did a day. We did him and Tanya in a day.
Yeah.
And Tanya, God bless her. Oh my God. She had COVID the week before.
Right.
And she got out of isolation 2 days before. She was so sick. She was still so sick. And it was hot day and we put her in a wool cardi and she bloody nearly collapsed. So bless Matt, actually, we sent her home at one, like towards the end of the day because we were just like, she needs to go. Yeah. She did all that feeling like, dog shit.
Wow. Yeah, wow.
And then Matt just did it. I called my mate Sarah. I was like, Sarah, we need someone to stand in. And she was like, I'm having brunch around the corner. I was like, get out of here. And so Matt did loads of the lines to my lovely friend Sarah.
Really? Yeah, that's cute. Yeah, okay.
So, you know, all those things and like those things, how they kind of come, there's the hodgepodge energy of how those things come
how
together.
Shorts get made,
and how you get, everyone's like, how did you get the stars? I'm like, one, because I'd known her and the second by complete accident. And now, you know, Matt is someone I hope to work with, you know, going forward. And he's just been, and they've been both so supportive of the film. You know, Tanya's won like two awards on the festival circuits is just so lovely. And Matt was nominated for British Short Film Award with it. And it's just so nice. Yeah. So, I mean, God, they don't fucking need it, but it's so nice to see, you know, them. Yeah. I don't know. I just love it. And they're and I just like the generosity of doing something. It's made such a difference for me as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Like to have them in it.
Totally. Yeah. Your
you know, kind it of elevates credibility, it. I suppose.
And it shouldn't. It shouldn't be the way, but it really helps. Yeah. Like, slightly starry casting.
Do you
casting.
Mean, like, with the... Just in terms of emailing that short off to people and getting replies?
Yeah,
or do you mean, like,
definitely.
Festivals as well?
Festivals. Okay, I swear to God, festivals.
They care.
They love us.
I want to go into that.
They say they don't.
That's interesting,
they love it.
Do you remember, like, I think Philip... Was it Philip who was mm-hmm. saying, like, he was saying he didn't really...
I think London Short Film Festival is a bit different, though. They kind of
London Short
program
Film Festival
a bit
really
nuts
care.
Stuff.
I've also heard it can go... I originally was told if you have a star in your short, it goes against you.
Yes.
I think they want that, don't they?
Some festivals... I think maybe there are certain festivals that are a bit like, it's all about the art.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm so annoyed. It's just like that. But I think there are other festivals which...
Yeah,
you know, especially
they like a little bit of star power.
But actually, they want you know want to be tweeted about.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, no,
it
I
can
I,
help.
Why wouldn't they want to? Like, why wouldn't
but
they want?
I know
someone kind of.
It's hard though, but it's also very helpful when you're doing your next short to be like, I had these.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I'm just being.
I
honest.
Found that having a couple of people in my last thing and be people literally people like I've just been emailing directors about like shadowing them like, oh
yeah.
You've worked with so and so. Yeah, sure. And I'm like, great.
Yeah, it definitely helps. And you know, but like almost like I'm also writing two features and both of, you know, and they were like, who do you want for this? You know, and they're, you know, with some nice people and stuff like that, and I'm like, I want Tanya Reynolds,
right?
She's got to do it. I mean, I haven't talked about this yet, but like that's what you know, and and I think there is also the great thing about like starry casting. I think also, you know, some people that like to it's don't underestimate up and coming talent. Do you know where they're going to go? Not saying that I'm going to be huge, but do you know what I mean? It's that like I think you know you can get some older big hitter. It's really clever. I think not for me. I've seen it with other filmmakers and other writers and stuff with who have relationships with certain actors. I'm like, attach yourself to the young up and comers because you might
never
get your, you know, if they're doing a BFI indie and you've never really had your big BAFTA fucking film thing, you know, it's not a stupid idea. I'm not saying that's why these guys did it with me, but like at all, but I'm saying like, actors should do it.
Well, I guess it's
as well.
It's if you're, you know, if you've been having bit parts in the bigger stuff, you haven't had a big leading role, then maybe it is to do, you know, be paid bugger all, like a Curly Whirly and 50p or whatever.
50p and a Curly Whirly.
But then you get, you know, you get to play a character you would never have got to play.
Exactly.
And I guess that's, you know, what's in it for them.
And also,
Spike Lee talks about it. How did he get,
does
he got Lawrence Fishburne in one of his first
and then
films.
Duplass Brothers.
Duplass
are,
Brothers.
They talk about a lot. It is a shame, I guess, for those actors who aren't like you know, those kind of the name talent, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, just to shout out them as well, guys, you know. We're thinking about you, I'm thinking about you.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
But it is interesting star casting and you know, shorts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes, you know, shorts do, I mean, look at the ones that win everything, like the BAFTAs
they
and stuff. They
have
don't have
actors.
Stars.
Yeah,
in
you
them.
Don't.
Yeah.
Know
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
the most important thing, but
it really is. It helps if you don't think your film's going to be worthy. Like, I really mean that with talking about like big awards, like Academy, like the Academy and BAFTA. You gotta have a worthy subject matter, and you don't.
Oh, that's such another topic.
Oh, I know it's naughty. Worthiness. I don't think anyone ever talks about it.
Well, no, because we're not allowed to talk about it.
No,
we definitely talk about that. I wanted to just say, before we go on, put a bookmark in that, because I really want to ask this question.
Put a pin in it.
But like, for actors who aren't like, I guess, I mean, I'm asking you this, because you obviously love acting in short films
love
as well.
Love it. Love doing it.
I mean,
I'll
do
anyone's,
think...
just ring me, darling. 50p and a Curly Whirly, that's my rider.
Yeah, it's like, do you see them then, as we discussed, like purely as like a kind of, I mean, not purely, but like, they're more to get to improve your craft and network. I mean, I'm asking this question because, like, Will and I did a short film a few years ago, and then it got into Aesthetica, it's been director's notes, and I think it's a great short film. But I don't think it's necessarily helped me in my acting career.
Yeah.
So, and Will didn't even pay me a Curly Whirly for it.
What a...
So what do I get?
But I would deal with... You actually bought me a present for being in the short film. So.
I know it's like that kind of thing. I always think, like, I do, you know, make short films to practice and da 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 da. But you just never fucking know. I went to, you never know. And also things come back years and years later. And that's not why we should all do stuff we should do, because we love it. Blah, 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 blah. But of course, you want to do short films and you want to do films and any work to kind of elevate yourself.
Yeah.
You just never know. I went to, what did I go to? NFTS, Comedy Showcase, my wonderful friend, Abby Tedder, who plays Alison in Everybody Dies Sometimes. Okay. Love her, cool. Iconic. Yeah. And so I went to, you know, support her, see her film, which was brilliant, and got picked out. So I'm just name dropping because I'm loving the pal. She got named in the top 10 director's notes pick out of like 100 films. Anyway, just a little put. She's amazing. But there were a couple people I was just watching, and I was like, you know, we see the 10 film, 15 films or whatever they were. And there were some actors in some of them, and I went to find out what their names were and wrote them down. Because I was like, I want to use them.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
And my notes are full of just actors' names.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you never bloody know
who's watching that film.
And also, Cubicle, right? I acted in Chloe Wicks' Cubicle.
Brilliant.
Isn't it amazing? Oh my God.
The sound design in that film was phenomenal.
I think I have never been happier to see Chloe, because Chloe is smashing it.
Yeah, she's doing big stuff, huh?
She's just done True Love with Lindsay Duncan on Channel, I think it's Channel 4.
And she directed the Flatshare, was it?
Flatshare.
Did she do Flatshare?
She did Flatshare. But how it links to that thing is Alex Newland, who produced my first short I wrote, Petra, he was on the fence about whether to do Petra because it was a divisive subject. But yeah, no, Alex Newland saw Cubicle at Encounters and he just had that sent through to him as something that they wanted to do, Seek Films, who was... Daphne and Emily Carlton were doing it as well. And they were like, will you come on board to produce this with us? And he was just like, he just had it. And he was like, yeah, it's quite divisive, not sure about it. He saw Cubicle and was like, Charlotte acted in that. He was like, oh, I think she's, there's something about her.
Yeah.
Like she's not full of shit.
Interesting.
Because I was acting it. I think he was aware that oh, I was going to act in my own short film. And he was like,
that, you're not just a dreamer. Mm. You've done stuff.
He was like, oh, I think she can act.
And you see the energy, or you just impressed with
that. That film also got me an Apple docudrama about John Le Carré, where I played John Le Carré's mum.
Yeah,
because I didn't speak in it. Lol, no one wants to hear my voice. I didn't speak in Cubicle either.
What's the trailer for that?
It's beautiful. I mean, I was working with Errol Morris, who won a bloody Oscar. It was a batshit job, but I got that off. My agent sent that because I didn't say anything in it. So like a short film I'd done 7 years ago got me something.
So how did that work then? So do you mean the casting director saw that?
Yeah, they sent the tape because I got it was a straight offer, which is nuts. But I wasn't saying anything, and they just wanted someone who could communicate stuff without saying anything. Because it was that docudrama kind of style. And, you know, that's my agent sent Cubicle.
Right, yeah.
And
that
was from 7 years ago.
Yeah, you just never know.
And then I remember the producer came up to me and goes, I saw that film Cubicle. And I was like, what? I hadn't known that's what Sophie, who's my agent, had sent them. And so you just never know. And I just think there's, you know, you can hide the stuff you're not proud of. And I'm not saying I'm not proud of Petra. There's a reason why I haven't released it. Because there's money needed. I'm completely naked in it.
Right.
I obviously wrote it knowing I'd be completely naked.
Yeah, which is awesome, by the way. So brave. I mean, brave.
Very fucking brave. Also,
it's great. At the time, I didn't want to release it. Now I've put on about a stone. I'm like, release it. Oh, get it out there. I look fantastic. I remember being like, oh, God, I've got a role here. And now I'm like, oh, I look cracking. Sometimes I look back and be like, oh, yes, wonderful. I don't know. I think it's not the nudity. It's the subject matter. I just think my family would be mortified.
Yeah, interesting.
Because I also write so much about my life, and that's not about my life.
I was going to say,
it's about
incest. Personal.
It's about incest. I know it's a reveal, but I was commissioned to write a pilot about genetic sexual attraction disorder, incest, and that was off the back of that. It never got made.
Are you getting these through Casa Rotto for your agents?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically,
they're sending your shorts to Apple or Netflix?
No,
like
I think a lot of it is just, it is not the shorts. So they're as writers, I've got my spec scripts or my scripts that are used as examples, and Casa Rossi send them out and you go in meetings with all these different people and you pitch them your new ideas, and then hopefully someone, you know, takes on board, options it or commissions it. I've been very lucky that people will commission a script and then that has financially kept me afloat, and then you've got to try so I've been very lucky that's been the way, and you know, I have a phenomenal agent, actually, Emma Obank, who's just left to become a producer. She's brilliant. And so I've split Casarotto and with an equally incredible guy called Gabe Blair. And they've always pushed for me to get commissions rather than just options. And so that people have paid me to write my scripts, which cool, has meant that I've been able to work full time as a writer, which is absolutely mega. And then put some money back into doing shorts and stuff like
that. Is that how you fund your short
that's
films?
That's how. So Petra, I put some money into. We made that really for 50p in a curl, really. Yeah. Wow. And then I put half of the money into Everybody Dies and then paid for the festival circuit, just not even knowing what I was like, click, 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 click. Dude, and I was like,
that was going to be our question about how you did that. Yeah.
Dread to think what I spent on that. And now I'm now auditioning for commercials like left, right, etc. Because I was like, I need
It's mental, isn't it? We had another guy, Grant, on, and it's so addictive. Oh, you go and you get rejected from
film
a bunch,
freeway. Then, yeah, ooh, it's like sort of the new Hinge. You're like,
isn't it?
You're like, come on.
That one looks good. Oh, I'd like to go there.
It's when that confetti comes up and they're like, you're in. You're like, It's so addictive.
What do you think about that? Like how you get your work seen and that's the way that supposedly we get our work seen?
I didn't know like so much about this process. Talking about that first play and talking about the first short film, I just didn't know. Like with Petra, when they sent it out, I had nothing to do with I didn't know what Film Freeway was. They sent it out and we got into Aesthetica actually. And that's where I realised actually, this is my top tip for anyone who's like, I get quite a lot of people reaching out being like, you know, what's your advice to filmmakers? And I was like, I haven't got any advice. I've done about one thing. But mine was when I went to Aesthetica to watch Petra, which quite mortifying watching yourself naked in a room full of people. And you're like, oh my God. And I've never been to a short film festival.
Yeah, wow. So fun. Yeah.
And we must have seen 150 films in that weekend. We went to everything. We were like, yeah, let's go. We got fucking hungover. It was brilliant. We had a time of our lives.
It is like the best. It was just like so much fun.
And that
particularly was fun. Yeah.
But also, do you know what's amazing about Aesthetica? Is like, I was like, oh, I bet some of these are going to be rubbish.
Yeah.
That festival, Everybody Dies to not get in. I was absolutely furious. That quality of that festival is so high. Yeah. Like my mate who did it, similar things to church. She was like, I think going to like Aesthetica. And I was like, dude, that's huge.
Yeah,
go. It's amazing. It's brilliant. Yeah. And again, like the naivety I had, but I'm going to that and watching like a million short films and going, that is how you learn. Someone's like, how do you learn how to do a short film? Go and fucking watch them. And there are so many online.
Yeah.
You can get, there are so many. Watch them. And most importantly, you do know what you, it's not like, oh, that's what works. It's, oh, that's what doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We went when my film was in. Yain got up and shouted at someone for getting up in the middle of the film. When our screening, he was like, how dare you? What did you say? Come on, have some respect or something. I was like,
I love it.
I did not. It was great, though. I was just, like, cringing in my seat. Cause, like, oh, my God, they hate it. And Yain's like, have some respect. Just, like,
that's
shouts
not
it.
What I said.
I love it. I love it.
I said, come on.
No.
Walking in front of a projector and it was, like, But it wasn't just our screen. It was, like, loads. Yeah, and it was, like, annoying. And I said, come on.
But you see everything. You see everything and what you see the dramas that work and don't work, the comedies, especially the comedies that don't work.
I will stand by this. It is easier to write a feature than it is to write a short. Till I am put in this ground. Honestly, writing a short film is the hardest thing. Yeah, you've got to tell a story in, please, for God's sake, under 10 minutes. If it's ever over, I'm like, go. Because I sat on the Raindance jury this year on the short films. Yeah, I ran the short film, ran it, was on the short film category and watched all the short films.
I bet that was a learning experience.
Yeah, because do you know what? That's going to be sick. But you see a film and it comes up and it's like 20 minutes and your heart sinks. Guys, and then that film has to work harder. Honestly, the reason Everybody Dies has done well on the festival circuit is because it's 8 minutes.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly believe.
Yours 8 minutes has done terribly.
But I, you know, you never know. There's no rhyme nor reason. I'm keep it short, kill your darlings.
Kill those darlings. 5 minutes, you do it 5 minutes. It's like a good, if you can make a really good.
You can do it 5 minutes.
But it's so hard.
Cubicle is done in 3.5, 4 minutes.
Is it really?
I think so.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's like something.
Do you know also that film has done so well because, and Chloe said, because she sometimes, every like, maybe like once every 6 months, I'll message her and be like, or maybe I'm like, what are the Vimeo stats? Because you can see where people have watched your film. Yeah. And I just find it fascinating. And it did really well in Asia and in Mexico randomly. And we were like, why? And she said, I think it's because there's no language. So it kind of there's nothing said in it.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's no subtitles. And she was like, it means you kind of get a whole access
to a whole market you wouldn't otherwise. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Which she never set out and thought about that when they were making it. Mm. And I've got like, we filmed that in some loo in a community call. Mm. And I just said, yeah, I'll do it. And I didn't know what I was doing.
Nuts, isn't it?
And it looks stunning.
Did they have like a paddle mount then? Were you guys using
a paddle mount?
Yeah, so
this is where I go. Right.
As in, did they properly rig the, so they were rigged the camera up? They didn't do that. They cheated that with a tripod or something like that, with the shot of the top down. Oh, interesting.
Big tripod.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, I was curious how they did
that. You've just asked Dan. I'm like, I don't know. I really don't. I can't. Yeah. I'm going to say I can't remember. I actually don't know really what you're talking about.
Right.
It was like there were three of us.
I only learnt this a few months ago. So.
Oh, fantastic!
I'm doing this. It's my version of Swing a Lens.
But you know, Chloe,
they've got a paddle mount on that cubicle. Yeah. Someone get that paddle mount out, please.
How many times can I slip?
Chloe turned up with a big vat of pasta she cooked the night before for our, you know, and that film did so well. And you know, I remember kind of forgetting that I'd done it, and then was like, oh god, this is doing really well. Again, I didn't know much about the festival stuff, but she's brilliant, and I really, you know, you're like, fuck yeah, you deserve that.
You're so good, and you've
paid your dues, and you've made some bloody brilliant stuff. She was brilliant to work with, a lovely person, highly intelligent. Yes, please, more of that. Go fly, bitch.
She's worked with our last guest, Sam Baron, on a project.
Yes, they did
Fragile Package.
That's how I've met Sam. Yeah.
Oh, do you mean on that project or just through it? Or like
I met at dinner at Chloe's house. And that's so nice as well because, you know, I'm not in their filmmakery circles. And through this, you just meet people who can give you advice. Like, I've asked Chloe's advice on stuff and I think having that generosity of spirit, I think, is one of the most important things.
Yeah.
Me getting a bit earnest. But I like people being generous to one another. And I think if you're not generous, that's a sign of insecurity.
Mm.
And I know that because I've been not generous early, like in my career and stuff, because I'm like, no, I don't want to. Yeah, I don't know. And I just think, you know, obviously people get really busy and they can't be generous with their time as much as they'd like to be, and you know that's tough. But I think I think people have been so generous to me and my mates basically who know shit and giving the time and really helping. Like,
it's great, isn't it, when someone's like, wow, I can't believe you've done that, spent that time to read this script and give me like a big analysis.
It's never lost on me when someone, even someone whose job it is to pay to read my scripts and have a meeting, it's never lost on me that someone sat down and that's still
taking the time to do that.
That's still fucking cool. Cool.
I don't think there's many other, I don't know, like where people would give their time to do something like that, even if it is just like we're not necessarily mates, but I met you at this one thing, or like and it just you spent probably 2 hours doing that or an hour doing that. I think that's really
even if
great.
Someone turns you down for something, they've still spent the time reading.
Yeah,
I don't know, that's cool. And like, you know, people do. I find it hard because I find giving notes on people's scripts incredibly difficult because I'm so dyslexic and I'm like, I don't know what. It's quite hard for me to concentrate on shit.
Yeah.
Hence why I go off on tangents a lot. So I actually often say to people, like, if they want me to read their script, if you know, I do find it so difficult. I'm always like, I am not the best person to read someone's script. I'm pretty sure I am quite good on short films because I think I can be like, I always ask, what are people looking for when they ask me for feedback on stuff? Like, what do you want from this? Because you just don't want, because a lot of people sometimes send it and they just want to be flattered. And I'm like, but what do you want? What feedback do you want?
Kind of feedback do you
want? That's very helpful, I think, because like some people don't want your feedback and they're just sending it to you.
What do they usually, what do you find people say? Because what I say is, I want brutal, honest feedback.
That's what we do with each
other. That's what we always say. We preface it.
I think you should, you shouldn't ask somebody like, if it's a mate, like, yeah, I don't think you should ask someone for brutal, honest feedback unless you, well, I don't know, hang on, I don't know actually, I take that back.
What kind of...
I'm trying to think, it's like someone I don't know messages me and goes, can you read my script? And often I accept, you know, sometimes I'm too busy and I can't look at it and I'm not, I always say, you know, please contact me later and, you know, if they really want it, they often do. And I will try to get back to, because you want to be generous.
Yeah.
But you can't, it's not your place. That's not my place with someone like, with someone I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
not my place.
I guess if you don't that know the true. Person, yes.
Well, what kind of feedback would you, like when you're writing,
would I want?
Would you want? Well, or do you, like for example, on Everybody Dies Sometimes, did you get, who did you get feedback from
my
in
sister.
The process? Really? And then did you ask for brutal feedback or you asked for like
brutal.
A general vibe? It was brutal.
She's actually a script editor.
Okay.
But getting that bitch to read anything, oh God, you have to literally like prize it into hand. I mean, she'll read stuff for her job. She's phenomenal at her job. She's the best out there. It really pissed me off.
You're right.
But with her and Everybody Dies, I'm sure she doesn't mind me saying this, Everybody Dies is semi-autobiographical.
Okay.
There's a lot in it that, I mean, there's a lot, it's quite funny when you say that, I was like, and then you're like, no, my mum's not dead. But like, there are certain things that obviously really didn't happen in it. But she knew that that was about, based on quite a lot to do with our upbringing, and she was just not reading it. I was like, and then I was like, come on, just bloody read it. And she was like, I think that she knew that it was going to be hard. And I think
that's quite triggering for her.
Yeah, okay. I mean, maybe. And I also think she's always got this fear that it's going to be shit. She'd have to tell me.
She'd have to tell you.
And she would.
It's just personal subject.
She
like,
bloody would. She'd love it. No, but she's brilliant because she knows me so bloody well.
Yeah.
She can go, you're trying to sound like X, or you're trying to be funny there, but that's actually not funny because that's not actually you. You're trying to do a knockoff of that person.
I love that. That's great. Yeah.
And then she can go, you're trying, this ending with Everybody Dies, she read it 2 days before we shot.
Oh my God.
And then did she have feedback?
It was the end.
That's
the
so
end.
Annoying though. Like,
I know.
2 days.
2 days. I know. Well, because it was just the end. But I knew what wasn't working.
Oh.
So I knew, I said, the end's not working. It's not working. And she was like, it's not working because you're trying to make this about you.
Right.
read between those lines.
She was like, what do you want? She's always, she read my latest short one. She was like, what are you trying to say? What do you want to leave people thinking? Mm. You've got three things going on. You've got three things. You've got three endings here.
Yeah.
And you want all of them, but those two are about you. This one isn't about you.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't tell me which one. She was like, I want it to be that. She was like, well, then cut that. That's just making it about you. And, you know, no one else is going to get that.
Right.
So cut that.
And because she knows you so well.
She knows so well.
That's not true to you.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like, it's not my fun experience. Okay. And she was like, it doesn't work. Like she, and it was really, she was like, it's really good. What do you want to say? What do you, it's a horrible question of like, what do you want? What do you want people to leave this saying?
I think it's an interesting one. It's like, why should people care if they're watching this? Like, what do you want to
a
viewer for 8 minutes?
Yeah.
And I think with the ending of that film, it was very funny. I was actually doing a kind of, I'm moving into commercial world now, actually directing commercials and stuff. And I was doing a pitch or like presenting it to an advertising company. And someone said, you know, I was talking about the kind of ads I wanted to do. And they were like, those are really kind of joyous ads. And this is a really dark film. And I was like, no, it's not. I think it's really fun and optimistic.
Well, totally
joyous.
Yeah,
totally.
It's joyous. Well, this is the thing. Like, I think having come out COVID with that ending, you can have such a brutal ending with that film. And I was like, you've got to have hope. And I think I found with Petra, there was no hope in that. And I want to give people joy and hope, especially after COVID and it all being about death and shit. And the more I'm realizing, and I was talking to a filmmaker friend the other day about, you know, with what's going on in the world, and it's fucking awful. And it really makes you go, what are we doing?
Mm.
Especially when you're like, we could be at fucking war in like 2 years.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's the point? And he was like, I just want to make things that are joyous.
Yeah.
And I think people want that. My next one is called Crimes Against Humanity. It's not joyous at all. I think either I want to make something that's really saying something important and going to change people's minds and perspective,
or I want to give bring joy.
Yes.
And you can have both.
You can have both.
I think loads of Ken Loach films have both the like saying something and then they are joyous as well.
Yeah.
And
I think like trauma porn. I'm over trauma porn. Yeah, I'm so over it. Exactly. I'm really over it.
But I feel like you kind of tonally in everybody.
You should explain, like, tell us about the like story as well.
The story. Yeah. So it's about a girl called Mara who believes she has the power to kill people because when she was younger, a lot of people died in her life, and so now she's like is frozen in her life because she can't get close to anyone because she thinks she's going to kill them. Mm. So it's kind of like a ridiculous concept. It's her conversation with her therapist. So yeah, it's semi-autobiographical. So when I was little, this is iconic. And I always go like, this is actually really funny. And it was me telling this story when someone was like, you have to write this. This is ludicrous. So I was maybe like 6, 7.
Yeah.
And a lot of people died in a very short space of time, maybe within like a couple of years. That shouldn't have died, like quite young people or like, you know, and also like great grandparents. And I was like, there was a time when I was like, oh my God. And me being like the most like overly, like I had an overactive imagination. I was just like, it's me.
Yeah, as a kid, I imagine.
And obviously I make everything about me. I was like, it's me.
Go. I was just like, it just reminded me a little, like with the color palette, the little girl of Amelie.
Amelie was, I mean, come on, it was like completely like, I ripped it off.
Yeah. But
I love those things that are shot through like a kid's lens, but which have like sort of like adult, heavy adult sort of content in them. Like, I've never really seen it on TV, but Boy Swallows Universe, which, oh my God, you have to watch it.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh my God, it's an Australian Netflix show. It's like absolutely outstanding. It's one of the best things I've seen, but it's all through a child's perspective, but the content is so fucking adult and it's so breathtakingly funny and so serious. And it's just fucking perfection. Everyone has to watch that. It's genius. Boy Swallows Universe. I like honestly farted. I laughed so much. Fully farted. I was like, I couldn't contain myself anyway.
I think we've got a soundboy there.
Fully farted. I love it. Anyway, watch that. So with everybody, I was back to everybody dying, literally. And then, so I was sent my school, like I was studying the Great Fire of London, and this actually was in the short film, and my sister was like, cut it. Like, no, no one gives a shit. I love her. She's brilliant. She's also the nicest person in the world, but she's just a genius. Lexi, love you. Anyway, so my school, I was studying the Great Fire of London, and I was like, they were like, you know, all this, and no one told me that nobody actually died in the Great Fire of London, like 2 people died. So I just would wake up in the middle of the night and like would be obsessed with the thinking that my family was burning to death. And I had this chronic fear of fire and I was like terrified of death. And they brought the fire engine into school to show me the you know, whatever, I don't know, love my school brought a fire engine. I think I made that up, though. They brought it in for me. And then so I was sent to a therapist. The school arranged one for me because they were like, something's really wrong with her. Because I wasn't sleeping and I was like obsessed with the idea that my family were going to die in a fire. Oh. So I went to this therapist called Robin and he was amazing. And I remember it so well. He was only like 45 and he was so magical. And he kind of diagnosed me with separation and death anxiety. And 6 sessions in, he died.
No way.
Not in front of me as it happens in the film, but he fucking died.
No way.
Yeah, Robin died.
Fuck, so it's crazy.
Yeah. And so the therapist that Matt plays is based on my therapist.
Yeah.
Who I actually, oh my
God. Your therapist now.
Yeah, but what's hysterical is I'd stopped seeing him during that window of time, so I didn't think I'd ever go back. To him when I made the film. And then I tried another therapist or two and they didn't really work. And I kind of went back to my therapist. I was like, hi, I know we haven't seen each other in a couple of years. I may have made a film about us. Is that a problem? And he was like, it was quite interesting to talk about the ethics of like whether he should watch the film or not. And like, would that inform him about like his
role in your film?
He came off very well in your film, right?
Yeah.
Matthew Horne character.
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah. He hasn't died. And those lines are true. So basically, when I first went to see my therapist, I'm trying to say his name. When I first went to see him, I said to him as an adult, I was like, I've run away from every therapist I've ever tried to go to see. Like, and I'll just lie to them. I'll lie to them and I'll run away. And he was like, why is that? And I'd never said this before. I went, I killed my therapist when I was 6.
Right.
And he was like,
what? Oh, wow. I was like, and that's why I think I've run away from everything, because I'm
so,
like,
you believe so, that as an adult?
As an adult, I was like, well, I didn't kill him, but I was like, I think that's why, because I was like, every time I got close to this person who cured me, and Robin really did, I didn't have death anxiety afterwards. Like, I really didn't. Mm. And the weirdest, and then he died. But but he cured me of it. He had cured me of it. And I remember the exercise he did with me that cured me of it. And I loved him, and he had a kid, and I think about his kid sometimes, and I just, you know, sometimes, like, I want to find him and be like, your dad was amazing. I do know his name, though, so maybe I could. Bit weird. This is, like, my weird homage to him and those people as well who are, you know, no longer with us. And the thing about the kids, the thing about the baby, that's not necessarily true, but I know that that's based on someone I know who was nervous to bring life into the world because they were so scared of losing them, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it really is semi-autobiographical, but it is that, you know, and I think that's quite fun, but I do feel quite removed from it. Like, it doesn't feel like it's, you know, Tanya is a much more exaggerated version of
Well, I think you've got to take some kernel of something that's in your life or people that's in your life, and then you dramatize it all.
And that was part of the reason Tanya wanted to do it, because she suffered really badly from death anxiety, and I hadn't seen anything about death anxiety. And kind of,
is that white noise, the Noah Baumbach thing? There's a whole death, it's not about that, but there's a whole death anxiety thing in there or something. That's
great.
The first time I'd like heard about it.
Well, I think because in COVID, right, I remember suddenly everyone was dying and everyone was frightened of death, and I'm like, oh yeah, now everyone gets how I feel. You know, I think that was kind of cool. So it was kind of cool that everyone was dying and everyone understood me. I think, you know, it's that sort of, you know, thing of, and talking about grief, and, like, I think that's become okay now, and we just wouldn't talk about it, and, like, how grief was handled. I think it's quite revolutionary when I was six that people were able to talk about the losses and stuff that. But it was only sort of thinking about in hindsight, like, bloody hell, we really did lose a lot of people. Or, like, you know, I've read so many eulogies, I've been to so many funerals. It's just a bit nuts how much.
Yeah, it will happen in a short.
But I don't know. I think death's not something I'm afraid of talking about.
Yeah.
And I think we should be a bit better. And we're so bad in England.
Yeah, like a taboo. Right.
I'm
wary of the time as well.
I know,
but
I really want to
veer it into as a couple of different things. So you got into some, like, really high profile festivals with Everybody Dies Sometimes, like Tribeca and things. And it's now on all Virgin Atlantic flights. Yes. So could you
I love it so much.
Yeah. One, how that came about.
Yeah.
Two, like, what do you get? Have you got anything from that? Like, Tribeca, for example, did Tribeca lead to Virgin Atlantic?
Cause, no.
Because we've had a guest on who had his short film on airlines.
Yeah, I heard that.
Richard Raymond. And he got... Yeah. And he got he got a producer on to make producing his feature from it and stuff like that.
Oh, so, I pray that happens
well,
to me.
It's pretty cool, isn't it? But I'm like, I'm intrigued. So you getting into Tribeca, like, what was that experience like? And then what has it led to? Did that lead to the Virgin Atlantic? And then what's the deal there with Virgin Atlantic? And
getting a short film on that?
How the fuck did that happen?
Okay, it's so random. I'm going back to, like, the naivety of my whole situation was, you know, it's ridiculous. Like, some of the things I think about, it's ridiculous. And I know that other filmmakers are like, you fucking what? You, like, fucking just go and try Becca. I was like, yeah. So basically what happened, so after I produced, the producers, you know, produced it, and then I sort of took over the festival run of it, as it were. Sorry, I'm just rearranging myself. And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even know. Okay, everyone's gonna hate this. I didn't even know. Like,
I'm already hating.
I know. I didn't even know what most of the film festivals were. The only reason I did this at my intro at Tribeca. The only reason I clicked on Tribeca because it was the one I'd heard of. I know I deserve to be like. I mean, I heard. I'd heard some of them, but I also didn't know about, like, the premiere status. That meant a thing. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know about the international thing meaning a thing. Uh-huh. Really, I kind of learned. We'd applied to a few, and we first got. I just assumed nothing. I really did assume that it wouldn't get into anything. I just wanted to release it online, and it's taken about 7 years. I'm releasing it online next week, finally. And so it was like festival. So we got into Raindance, and I had heard Raindance. Yeah. And then but they were like, you've been nominated for Best UK Short. And I was like, what? I was like, cool, award. I love it. So that was sort of the first one. I was like, wow. And then I remember going along to that. And I didn't realize that how big a deal that was. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is really cool. So I kept applying to stuff. And then we got into, and I only knew about the British Short Film Awards through my friend James Newman, because he'd had his film there. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should apply to that. And then we won like Best British Short Film there. And I was like, oh, right. And Best Editor as well. I was like, oh, fuck. And also it was so bad because at the end, because I was, we were up for 5 awards there. I couldn't believe it.
Mm.
And I knew the one we weren't going to win was the Best British Short Film. And that was the last one. And there was loads of free booze. I was so trashed. I could not see. And I was wearing the most obnoxiously high heels. And I was like, we are not going to win this. I thought we might win Best Editor because I think the editing is phenomenal. Caitlin Spiller is a genius who I will grab onto for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I thought we'd win that one. And I didn't win the others and whatever. And so I was like, I was so drunk, I couldn't see. Anyway, so Lord knows what I said. Someone messaged me the next day
you won the best.
We won it. Yeah, we won it.
This was Rain Dance.
No, this was the British Short Film Awards. But we've been nominated for a few things. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I started to get a bit punchier with things. And then I was like, oh, I'd, you know, try some American film festivals or something.
And they can see what you've got into. Or
I'd obviously submitted to Tribeca and completely forgotten about it. We hadn't got Sundance, and you know that I had heard of that as well. And I said, da, 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 da. And you know, what happened? I got a call, from a American number, and I remember going, I think this is around the Tribeca date, and I rang them back, and he was like, hi, this is Tribeca. I was like, oh my God. And they were like, we were wondering what your status. No, I got an email. Sorry. I got an email out of the blue from someone at Tribeca saying, because we'd submitted like 4 months before or something. They were like, we want to know the status of your film. Would this still be, it's not its world premiere. And I was like, no. And they were like, would it be its international premiere? I was like, yes, it would be. And I was like, fuck, 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 fuck. And we'd applied to lots of others and had got in. And I was like, we would, you know, withdraw. So that was when I knew what this status shit meant. And I was like, holy fucking hell. I was like, Tribeca, Robert De Niro, panic. And then a week later, I got a call from a New York number and I went, oh my God. And they said, you know, we're going to put it in it. And we want, and you know, and it has to be the international premiere status. So any ones I had submitted, we hadn't got into them necessarily, but I suddenly withdrew and you're thinking, that's £300 for people. But you're like, it's Tribeca, so it's fine.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Amazing.
And then we went out and lots of the team, none of the team really could go, but the composer came over and she was, oh my God, this is a mad story. She's like the most talented person I've ever met, Carla Petullo, like extraordinary music. And she was like, I'm gonna combine it because I'm recording an album when I'm over in New York. So she was doing her album there, and her album won a Grammy last week.
Oh wow, man.
So she howls, and I was like, oh my God. Anyway, so we walked up, so I saw who was in my block, because you get, you know, blocks of 5 people, and I was like, oh, that, I know that name. It's Francesca Scorsese.
Oh, right.
And I was like, oh my God, did you think that means her dad's coming? And I rocked up outside and went for our little red carpet appearance with my dad.
No.
God bless him. Who's not Martin Scorsese. And we were like, oh my God, Martin Scorsese's got to see my film on, like,
He was watching it. Amazing. Did you speak to him afterwards?
No, too scared.
That's pretty cool.
So I was like, my first film was watched by Martin Scorsese. Wow. And my dad, who's 6'5", bless him, and not in this industry at all, he was like, do you think they're going to ask for a dad's photo?
Classic.
I really loved Goodfellas, Marty.
But it was really, because my dad knows nothing about the industry. And it was kind of gorgeous. Oh, I'll tell you a very funny thing about the red carpet thing, because also Ben Stiller's wife was in one of the other shorts.
Yeah. Right, who's a famous actor, right?
He's a famous actor.
She's a famous actor.
She's a famous actor. Yes. Yeah, and she was wonderful. And he was on He was on the red carpet right before me. And it was mad. So we were queuing up to go on the red carpet. And I was like, oh my God, Ben Stiller. And I was like, this wall of paparazzi, this wall of fans. And I was like, I'm getting ready for my moment. Ben Stiller goes in and I walk out onto the carpet and look out. And there's just... the crowd's gone. Yeah. All the photographers have gone except for the one official photographer. My dad,
all so
6'5" of him, standing behind the barrier with his iPhone going like this, and there's no one. And I'm sort of like giving my best sort of like hand on hip, pouty pouty, to this one photographer and my dad. Those moments and then you're instantly very humbled. But Tribeca was amazing.
That's cute. That's so cute. Image your dad with his phone.
And they were so sweet because they were like, where's all the other filmmakers were from New York, and they were like, where are you having your after party? And I'm like, it's me and my dad. And the composer and my mate who lived in New York. And they invited us to like their after party, and they were so generous.
Was it a good vibe, the festival generally?
It was a really good vibe. It was a really good vibe.
But Did you meet other filmmakers?
Yeah,
like that
lots of the short ones, and mine also was selected to screen before a feature film, which was so cool.
That's very cool.
Which was you know one of the biggest ones playing in competition. So it meant that like it got
loads
seen,
people, yeah.
And that I think was more valuable than
the
short.
Yeah, that opened doors.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, it did. Oh. So just having, and did you get like emails from producers afterwards?
Well, it was the writer's strike, so I couldn't meet anyone.
That's frustrating.
Couldn't talk to, which was a real shame.
But then after the fact, as it happened.
Yeah, there have been. I've had quite a few meetings from people who've seen stuff. Right. And
Sorry to interrupt. Is it also now you as a filmmaker have had a film at Tribeca?
Helpful.
That level up. I guess.
Yeah, it's really helpful. I think.
Yeah.
I think you can't. I think it makes people will watch. Like people I'm sending to or like. Hopefully they can see
the Tribeca laurel.
Yeah, it shouldn't work like that, but it's very, very helpful. Like, and I think it's amazing. And Tribeca are very good at supporting. Like once you're in, I think they're very proud of bringing people back who've had shorts who might have. They're going to look at your feature, and they will look at you. You don't have to submit it through Film Freeway. Yeah. I think you can go straight to them and they watch it. If I think that's the deal, or you go through it to a different round. So you know, and I think that's really brilliant. I just couldn't believe it. Like I'm kind of like, it's that sort of with the next one I'm writing and directing, I'm like, oh God,
I hope this is good.
Oh God. But I love it. I love the process. I love also this one's a dark comedy horror, so it's a totally different genre. So I think it will have a different, it's definitely an elevation if everybody dies, because everybody does die, isn't it? Yeah. But I think it will have a different festival journey, because I'd love, there are such amazing horror-y festivals and kind of doing that. So I didn't want to do something that's going to emulate the same thing. The luck of that has been mad. And then the Virgin Atlantic thing came
from.
You took
the words right out of my mouth. You saw me
go. I got it. Virgin Atlantic. So we got into Discover Film Awards, which is really brilliant and amazing. Film festival in London, and if you win the main prize, which we didn't sadly, but you get £12,000 cashed, which is amazing. So I was like, I'm entering that. And it was brilliant, and we won best British comedy or best comedy. And so what they have a deal with Virgin Atlantic for short content, and so they present to Virgin, I didn't know any of this all came to me after like months after we'd had it there, and they said, we present Virgin with X amount of films. They I think they look at the winning category and then they pick like 4 or 5. And I was one of them.
That's sick.
Fucking mad.
Did Virgin then paid you to?
Yes, not very much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not a lot.
I was
quite surprised how, but it's exposure.
And still, you never know.
It's 50p in a curly whirly. You never know who's watching it. I did get a very nice gentleman slipping into my DMs, not in a creepy way, saying he'd seen it and was like, where can he show his friends? And I was like, it's not out yet. That was cool. And then my mate got a Virgin flight the other day and she like videoed watching it, which was so cool. So I'm like, I need to get a Virgin flight.
Just to watch
my film up in the sky.
Maybe that's how you can be like rep for Virgin. If you want to see my film, you got to buy some Virgin flights.
Exactly. So it wasn't that financially, but if they choose to continue it, then maybe, I don't know. It wasn't, I just think that's the deal. I don't know. But then I'm like, oh shit, I should have got my money.
Anyway, it's good exposure.
Great exposure. And I just didn't think that's anything it's brilliant. Like, it's brilliant. I'm constantly like, lol. I think everything this year I've been like, lol. But yeah, it has, yeah, it's been really brilliant. Awesome. I'm really just ready for it to just get online and go out and and do its thing. We could have released it ages ago, but I think I was fanning about busy and fanning I've forgotten, fanning about, I don't know, there's also fanning about from me. So, so finally it's going out and it was in the right time and just, yeah, it's great. So I don't know, I'm just excited for it too. But I think by doing it all myself, that sort of festival run and like doing all the releasing and pushing all of that, I've just learned so much. It's been the best training ever for anything. I still don't know what I'm talking about, but it's if you can do like at least one, like I'm really excited to kind of hand over the reins to someone, you know, really kind of who would produce the festival run and do all that sort of stuff next time. But if you can do it or you be really involved in that, it's the most extraordinary learning curve, really. I think. And just like clicking and hoping for the best, but oh my god. Not Tribeca, I said that Tribeca, everyone's like, shut up.
I was gonna say, like, I mean, maybe last couple of questions now. But I guess we've talked quite a lot about industry throughout the conversation, which is great. But then I guess from like a craft perspective, I mean, incredible that this is your first film. Like, what would your, I guess, advice be to like people who want to make that first short film? Like, what do you think you learned creatively on that film that you thought worked well? I know that's very general, but is there anything that Stan comes to mind?
It's so funny. I never like, everyone's like, what's your process? I'm like, I don't really have one. Creatively, what's my advice?
Yeah, I think, what, you know, what kind of stands out?
I think this is like a taste thing, maybe. I just think telling a story. Like, tell that story. Pick that story you want to tell and tell it really well. It's easier said than done. I just don't think there's anything wrong with a beginning, middle, and an end. And I think that's what a lot of short films lack that I've seen. Yeah. People don't know how to end short films. I still don't know how to end a short film. I think, like, just be, I know what this is. Sorry, I have to think about it. I wanted the film to feel magical. And every time I felt I was losing something on that shoot, I was like, magic, magic. It needs to feel magic. There needs to be a bit of magic. And I remember saying, actually, to Matt at one point, that last bit when he says to her, he's like, I think she's going to be okay wherever she is. So sad. And I remember saying to him, he whispered it, and that was just him going, wherever she is, whatever it is. And I just said, it just has to be magic. And I said, that's so annoying. It's such an annoying thing. But I was like, I just knew how I wanted people to feel when they watched it. And it was like, when you're losing sight of, like, someone's going, we've got 5 minutes, and you know, what do you want for lunch? And all those things. And in edit and in the music. And it was the atmosphere. And I think it's like, if you know how you want people to feel leaving it, remember that. Tone. I think it's like, hold that. Like, I remember writing and being like, ooh, like, ooh, I got like little tingles. Not in a sexy way. That sounds like, ooh. But that, Matt, I knew how I wanted. There was a song, actually. I wrote it to a song on repeat.
Did you?
And it was just called Mara. And that's why she's called Mara. It's a Jack Garrett song, and I actually met him not long afterwards. And I was like, I don't know. He was very nice about it. But it had this like magical, and it's like a 7-minute song. And it was almost like I was writing it to, like, it would be like the pop video. I don't know, it was really weird, but it tells a story. Like, he kind of, the lyrics are really great, and he tells a story of someone. Yeah. I love long songs that tell stories. And it was like, I had this feeling, like, when I was writing it, it's like this, like, very optimistic, like, and I just knew that's what I wanted. And so it's trying to remember that feeling that you get from listening to that song, or like when you wrote it, like why you want to tell this story, and that like magical,
which is a hard thing to do, you know. I think things can get lost as you make the film, as more people get involved, and like, you know,
everyone said that. I'm not being like, my set was amazing, but everyone said that set was really magical.
Okay,
we just had so much fun, and it felt nymphy, and like, I was like, let's have a laugh, but also get the job done.
Get the job done. But,
but it was trying to keep that energy when stuff was like, you know, Tanya was feeling sick, and like, you know, we need, with the things that, you know, happy, there's torrential rain and blah, 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 all that sort of shit. And it's, I think that was like, know how you want people to feel and try and create that atmosphere if you can on set.
Yeah.
Yeah, magic, guys.
I write to music.
Yeah.
But it depends on what project I'll be listening to a different kind
of. I've got
a
playlist.
Yeah.
I've got a Crimes Against Humanity playlist. It's all really? Yeah. Very aggressive. Heavy. There's a lot of Kanye West.
It gets you
West.
Into the mood as yeah. well. I imagine it's a similar, I don't know, I haven't really done much acting, but like getting yourself into that zone that
totally.
You need to be in, maybe.
It is
you need
that
to get
thing.
Yourself into a zone of writing, I find. And it was, yeah.
I think as a director, helps. You're a hype man. Like yeah. I've shadowed Dervla Walsh on Bad Sisters, and I was like, great, I think I this is how it. Like what I do, and I would like to do emulate it more. But like she goes up to the actors and she's almost like performing with them and like hyping them up and like being over. So you can, I think
it's
that's
creating an atmosphere. I think yeah. as a director, isn't it, for everyone to be able to perform their best,
and it does translate onto screen. And yeah. then again with like the music, when I was talking to Carla about it, I was like. I sent her that song and I was like, I want it to tell a story, and it's nymphy, it's naughty, it's like impish, it's Roald Dahl. It's very heavily inspired by Roald Dahl. I love Roald Dahl.
Yeah,
he's a dark motherfucker.
Yeah,
I love Roald, and children's stories were a huge thing because I couldn't read as a kid. Couldn't read.
Yeah.
Just couldn't do it. Too dyslexic. So my mum got me every single bloody book on audiobook. So I was constantly listening to stories and those worlds and going there, and you know, audiobooks create atmosphere, and it's all about creating that atmosphere. And yeah. I think that's how you kind of keep it's so funny hearing directors talk, because so many people are talk so technically about stuff and knowing the shots and saying, I don't do any of that. Yeah. Maybe I will in
well,
time.
Well, there's actually a great Ethan Hawke talks about
yeah,
it.
Talk about
so we did talk about this.
Well.
Yeah, yeah, just oh, about yeah. like, yeah, he's like, oh, I hope. Yeah, he's like, so many times I go to the set and then it's like you walk up and the director's first thought is like, oh, I hope he's not going to fuck my shot list up. And it's like, that's not what it's about, you know?
Yeah.
That's not so what true, it's about.
I always find it quite, God, I'm going to, I think shot.
I don't like them either.
Shot list. I didn't know they were a thing. And then I was like, you have a shot list. I was like, obviously you've got to have the, I'm like, let's shoot it. And like, I also shoot in, I think in edit. So I'm like, I know what I want. And I want to, yeah. The yeah. shot for me, I'm like.
So you do have, you would come at your short film with an idea of the shots.
Ish.
But you'd be like, okay, all right, interesting.
Yeah, ish. Yeah. I'm a DOP's nightmare. I'm like, ish.
I'm, yeah.
I'm
terrible for that. I kind of like plan everything out almost like.
I've just been burned by doing that, and
I've
also been burned by having it done where you haven't planned anything, obviously, like, you know,
it's a mix.
Just being too much on instinct.
There was, you know, I've learned that I need to, there are some things I've learned where I could have been more prepped, and that was that was wrong of me, and I missed coverage and I missed stuff that I should have had for me, and I regret that on certain things. And so I think it's a happy medium. I think you've got to be flexible. I think you've got to be
flexible.
You've got to work with what you've got, and if you get so rigid in your idea, and also you're all making a film. It's not just about the director and the writer. It's just not you're all there together doing it. I think you've got to be flexible, and but also you've got to be because if you weren't that prepared, you can.
Well,
yeah
you just
mix.
Get burned. If you don't prepare, you get burned. But then at the same time, I think if you're like, no, and something happens that's like outside the realm of your shot list that you created on a piece of paper, then if you can't be flexible, then you're screwed.
You're
as well,
screwed.
You know?
You're screwed. Or if you're not listening to someone who's like, kind of knows what they're doing, and like, you've got to have that. But I think, you know, the only thing is go and do it. Just do it and try 100%. And learn on the job, and don't pretend you know everything, but also wing it as well. There's a lot of. Don't tell anyone that.
It's scary to wing it, I think. I don't know.
I kind of get a big fucking thrill out of
Oh, the buzz, boys, the buzz. Yeah. Love the buzz.
I shadowed a director who's doing a big show, and I was talking to him about his process, or like shot list and stuff. He's like, dude, like I've got a 70-day shoot. I'm not sure. I haven't shot this anything. And he's like, you know, and I did the same thing. I did this show and I did the same thing he did. He was like, he picked two lenses. He knew he wanted to be handheld most of the time. Never wants to be on handheld or Steadicam. Never wants to be on sticks. Those are his rules.
Yeah.
And he goes dolly and things like that. Camera was never still. Those are his rules. And he knew his scenes. He planned his scenes out. But then it was amazing watching him just, he blocked. And then that's how they shot. The DP was there, and that's how they shot it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I did a show like that. that, and it was so freeing.
Yeah.
So I was like, these are the three lenses we're using. This is what it's going to feel like.
Yeah.
These, you know, we'd worked all the colors out and everything like that. Yeah. And then you block and you work it out, and it's like,
it's gorgeous.
That's the magic. And you couldn't do it if I was like, no, but now we must have a close up there. And no, if we don't, you know,
it doesn't look like similar. And I think that's where it comes back to like theater. Like, I miss theater, and like acting in theater was my happiest place as an actor. And there's nothing fucking like being opposite an actor, and you don't know what's going to come out of their mouth. We hope this lines. In my case, can't land lines, never was. Improvised Shakespeare, lol. But I think there's that thing, that liveness that I love and I don't ever want to lose with actors. And I think actors have more fun.
Definitely have more fun.
And if they are having fun, you're going to get a better performance out of them. Like,
it's so easy as a director to get into that rigid headspace. So.
Yes.
And then you forget. It's like, oh, you kind of forget, oh shit, I'm here to like be alive in the moment.
Well, someone said
you then as an actor, when I come in, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, be free with this. But then I know when I'm in that position, I'm the same.
I know this goes back to like, naivety is really good. But I remember someone saying to me, when I was toying between going to drama school and going to university, and he was like, you're quite like an academic-y thinker. Yeah. I think if you go to drama school, you're going to educate the actor out of yourself. You're going to lose your instinct. And part of me is like, justifies that, so I don't know. And he was like, I was like, do I need to go and do a film course or like learn about? And I really thought, I was like, no, I don't want to educate, because I would get really bogged down in that. And I don't want to educate the instinct out of me.
Because you're academically inclined anyway.
Yeah, I think so.
So like, you'd be thinking,
I just think I would become quite rigid. Whereas I think I love my gut is great. It's got a great microbiome. I think my gut's good. Mm. And I think my instincts are good.
Yeah.
I do. Well, I like just them anyway. Trusting. I think it's great. But I was like, gosh, the things that haven't gone right is when I've taken a writing job, particularly where I'm like, this isn't, there's someone better for this.
Do you know what?
Not insecurity. That's just knowing.
Is that the same then with writing in terms of like, I guess, thinking more by the book about like, I don't know, like going like, okay, we got the inciting incident and we got the midpoint here.
I never think like that.
I think it's good to have that, and I love, I mean,
which is
this.
Not, but you do have script editors. People don't know this. I say this to script writers all the time. Once you get in the business, there's someone whose whole job is to help you with structure.
But you don't worry, but you're just like, I just need to write from the art.
There are two schools of thought here, right? I've met someone who went to film school, fucking genius writer, wish I could write like him. Like, he thinks like structure, like, oh my God, what it, but like, you know, and I'm kind of like, oh fuck, wish I could do that.
Yeah.
But there's something that, you know, we all have our superpowers. Mm. And I think, I think I've watched enough fucking films and TV.
To have it be kind
to
of
know it's just in my bones, how to like write the middle point of a story. And yes, sometimes you have to go, okay, what's this character's motive? And you have to remind yourself those boring questions. But you do have someone there who does that for you. And I think, you know, and that's amazing. And hopefully they're good. But like, I don't know. I just liked, I'm sure my work suffers because I don't do enough of that stuff.
Mm. But as you say,
I've never read a book in my life about writing.
Yeah. Really?
Never. Well, I find them boring.
I've only read this one there. Yeah, it's fucking great.
Is
it's
it? Really
good. But I don't think this isn't like, it's the John York one, Into the Woods.
Oh, Into the Woods. And I've got it on my shelf. Have a read.
It honestly is great. But I know everyone loves it. I don't think it's that academic in the way there's like Sid Field and stuff. And he's not as prescriptive at all like those ones are, like 25 pages and, you know. And
more like Joseph Campbell sort of vibes. Right?
Yeah, but his is more, it's more actually like there's a lot of philosophy in there.
Yes.
And but it's around character and characterization. Exactly. And that is really fascinating. I think, you know,
I know lots of stuff I write, characters are based on people I know or like heightened versions of them. And I think maybe I just know really interesting people. But also I think there's another sense of like, I'm not saying don't read those books. I think they're phenomenal and brilliant and they can spark something in your work. But also like, I'm just like, watch so much TV and I'm like, just, you know, if you're doing an hour long for someone like Sky, I think an ad breaks.
Mm.
Where would the ad break be? I need a hook so they come back. Like, oh, so you just naturally know, you go like, I'm doing a half hour, what's going to, and it's a comedy and it's going to be like, you've got to have gags every three or four lines because that's what that kind of vibe is. Is it an hour long BBC thing? I think of like quarters of like hooks and like, you know, just instinctively like that. Not, someone's like, you're a three or four, five act structure person. I'm like,
what? Like, I just don't, yeah. I just don't think like that, maybe. I just think in, like, I think in ad breaks, I watch too much TV. But I think, you know, I do watch it a lot.
Yeah.
And I watch a lot of reality TV. And I think that's why my characters are good. I'm not lying. Yeah, I think that's why my characters are good. I'm justifying my Hey You subscription. I think that's why my characters are good, because I watch so many fucking crackers unhinged people on telly.
Yeah.
And they have such interesting character journeys.
Mm. And it's the facade that they're creating in front of the camera.
Yeah, I love it. I just love it. I think it's fascinating and they do weird shit. And I always, this is a good hot tip, especially for my TV work. My mate Gav is not in the industry, but he loves his telly. And he's, but he just loves good telly. He's not someone who's going to talk analytically about The Sopranos and why it's changed. Not like that.
Just
he
loves
just
it.
Loves, just likes a good TV program, right?
Yeah.
But not crazy, doesn't talk about it a lot that much. I just go, send everything to him.
Your scripts? Or
my scripts. And he's not, he's just my normal person friend. And I said, Gav, does it make sense?
And what is, and he says,
and he's
say?
Like, does it make, and he was like, I didn't understand this, or I didn't get this, or I...
Well, I guess he's the end. For
yeah, yeah, he's the person who's going to be watching it at the end of the day. He's my target audience, the homosexual man.
Yeah.
Fabulous homosexual man. And I think that's really important, because we get so bogged down in what, like, the industry thinks. Yeah. Fuck the industry. It's the audience at home.
Yeah. Right.
Especially with telly.
Because maybe, like, your industry friend would be able to tell you, well, I know that that's happening there because clearly you're trying to reflect what the thing is at the beginning, but nobody else is going to fucking know that.
And who cares?
Do we love that? Who cares? Who, you know, you've got to remember, like, we're making it because we enjoy it, but there's also people, like, you know, and that's what I've learned a lot with short films, is you go and you watch, and there's a lot of short films that are made for the festival circuit. And actually, I think the ones that do well are just ones that tell a really good story really, 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 really well. And that aren't trying to... they might not win everything, but they're not trying to win awards. They're just trying to... But once you get a taste of an award, God, it's nice. Give me them! I'm now like, we didn't get nominated for anything. That's a disgrace!
I want more!
That's a disgrace!
I think that's a good segue into our last question.
Yeah, okay.
So, what is your favourite short film?
Or a short film that's recently had a big impact on you.
Really big impact. Okay, so it was when I saw it at Tribeca. And forgive me if I say his name wrong. Alden Ehrenreich. Did I say that right?
Ehrenreich.
Who is an actor. He's an Oppenheimer. It's his first time directing. And it's called Shadow Brother Sunday.
Mm.
And it was... I mean, I lulled because I was like, it was produced by Francis Ford Coppola. but you know what? It was... I was with my dad. Because I went to all the films with my dad. Because now he thinks his next burnt short film is really cute. But we went and you saw loads of them, and it just, and it was what I was saying, just under in like 10 minutes told a really brilliant, really simple premise story. So simple, but I was so stressed the whole way through. It was about, the premise is a brother who, a man who's like really down out, failed miserably at life, and his brother's a famous actor. And he comes back for the weekend and he's about to be like a big star, and it's like a family gathering. And it's his younger brother, and it's really and he's in debt. This guy's got, and he's a loser, he's a massive loser, and Alden plays himself, not himself, plays the character.
Yeah.
Massive loser, and he sees his brother's laptop and he knows there's personal stuff. His brother's famous, and it's, does he take the laptop?
Ooh, I like that. What's it called?
Shadow Brother Sunday.
What, to sell the shit?
To sell it.
Okay.
To the press.
Right.
And it's so simple. Yeah. It's not...
I really like that.
Shadow Brother Sunday. And I was sweating. And it was so simple. It was brilliantly shot. Like, no, not trying anything arty-farty.
Yeah.
We're not trying to do anything cool. It was just... It was shot in sort of real time over the, you know, the kind of 10... Maybe it was longer. Maybe it was like 15 minutes. Of like whether he's going to sell this,
love it,
and he's, can he get the laptop out of the house?
Whoa, I love that. Shadow Brother Sunday, and he directed it, and he's in it,
and he wrote
very
it.
Very impressive.
And another one I really loved, which was at Filmoramax, which is a really great festival in Lyon. Harry Holland's film Last Call. It was also at Tribeca with Lindsay Duncan and Tom Holland in it, and. It's what I loved about it. It was a great example of a film, which a lot of short films do. It had a brilliant reveal. You know, when you start watching something and you think it's one thing and it's not. and then it was so moving, and the performance is just so good, and the atmosphere he created was stunning. So I think there are two kind of things with short films I love. It's telling a really good story really well, and then having, like, you think it's one thing and, oh my God, it turned it on its head and it's something else.
Yeah.
So they are the two examples of the films that I've absolutely loved.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant.
And they were stunning. But that old...
What was that one called, sorry?
Harry's one. Yeah. Last Call. Lindsay Duncan. It's stunning. I don't know if they've released it yet, but it's done really, really, really well.
We'll put on the... If we can get trailers and all that.
Yeah. Oh, do this. And he's the nicest man in the world. But yeah, that was just... That Alden one, fuck a duck. They're just simple. You don't have to be... And just really unpretentious filmmaking.
I really like that.
Yeah.
I really like that. And just doesn't have to be complicated. Mm. Just tell a good story and tell it really well. Easy said.
Keep it simple.
I think simplicity is good.
Yeah. It's a recurring theme on this podcast, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Yeah. Say one thing. Something my sister said. Pick a fucking thing to
pick
one. There were three. Pick one, bitch. Like, yeah, you know, I always think that with her. Mm. Pick one. But yeah, they were the ones that I absolutely loved. And also my normie dad, because he's a good litmus test. He loved the Sunday, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
He loved it. Like, it was really refreshing after actually
not
watching,
trying to do anything like, there's a lot of the worthiness. Yeah.
And it was just really good. And you're like, it ended and you're like, I have to see that feature. Because I think he's going to develop it. I have to see where that goes. God, it was sensationally active. I mean, he's an amazing actor. Anyway, they're my hot tips.
There you go. Thank you so much, Charlotte. That was mega.
This has been such a laugh.
Yeah, it was good.
I've had a joy. I really need the loo, but I've had a joy.